sucked. We're on to the free agency. Welcome to CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. Joining me is James Herbert. He's at Outside the NBA. You can find me at Matt Moore CBS or at HP Basketball. It did not suck for the Warriors game one of the NBA Finals as they dominated in a 113 victory. I never remember scores. 113-91 victory in game one. It was competitive for about a quarter, and then they broke it up in a little bit, and then the third quarter happened, and they just completely rained the hammer down. And for Golden State fans and for fans that find quote-unquote greatness to be excellent and the reason we watch and super fun and Curry and blah, 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 it was really fun. For everyone else that wanted a competitive finals, it was an alarming look at what may be the least competitive NBA season in history. There's a lot to get into here. We will talk about all of it. We are going to do this episode with the hot take cannon. If you are new to the show, here's what we do. We spit out a hot take and we rank it. The other one ranks it on a scale of 1 to 5. 1 means that's a completely reasonable take. I do not find anything to be over the top about that whatsoever. 5 means either LeVar Ball would say it or somebody that gets paid way more than us would say it on a morning talk show. Let's start with this right here.
Okay.
LeBron James is past the point of being able to be his best, and we're all in denial of the fact that he slipped.
That's like a 4.5. I mean, that might even be a 5. I'm going to give that a 5. Based on how he's played this playoffs, that's crazy.
So I've maintained that, well, no, like the Celtics are good and the Raptors are good. It's just that LeBron is just that much better. Like, that's just the gap. And now I'm kind of like, maybe they are bad because – I noticed this throughout the season. One of the reasons that LeBron James was not in my top three for MVP, which of course everyone thought was crazy a couple weeks ago, is this. I watched every possession LeBron James played defensively this year. And he often took off-ball assignments. He would guard Jay Crowder. He would guard spot-up shooters. And he was often lost in those situations. He played a free safety role, but didn't do it very effectively. He wasn't intercepting a lot of passes. He wasn't creating a lot of chaos. He was mostly just over-helping and then trying to communicate with the Cavs, trying to get them on track, which, by the way, they didn't because those guys were really bad defensively this year. And then he would be trying to recover on a closeout shooter, and his closeouts were bad. And I kept thinking, like, well, it'll be better in the playoffs. And now after going back and watching possession by possession last night, and watching how much Kevin Durant whipped him, and you can find my column on that on CBSSports.com, and he did. Kevin Durant whipped LeBron last night. He straight up beat him in a variety of situations. Yes, a lot of it was caused by the chaos that the Warriors' offense created with the rest of the Cavaliers, but it does not change the fact that KD lost him on backdoor cuts, on spot-up, close-out, you know, pump-fake and drives, on going behind screens. He beat LeBron. And so it does bring up a question of, is LeBron physically able to play defense at the level that he always has kind of been able to? And I will say that I think that he may have slipped. I think it's possible that he slipped on that end. And if he has, that's going to take away one of, like, here, he has to be everything for them. I've called him the Omega forward because he is the end of everything. He's able to do everything. He is the end point of everything. And Omega is the last letter in the Greek alphabet. If he's not able to do all those things, if he's not able to be great in every single area, they have no shot in this series. And that's what we saw in game one.
Okay, I have a bunch of thoughts. My main counter is that throughout the playoffs, he was playing that free safety role, and he was doing it incredibly. And that was a big part of the reason the Cavs' defense was good.
Was he?
And I thought so.
A lot of those,
I thought his help defense was awesome.
We talked about those spot-up threes that the other teams missed, right? That frustrated you. You're like, the Raptors just missed, and the Celtics just missed. I went back and watched a lot of them, and I didn't say it because it sounds crazy, but do you know who was the guy on a lot of those assignments?
I'm sure LeBron was some of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, look, I think he is not a mistake-free defensive player. I think off the ball, sometimes he loses focus, and it's been that way for the last few regular seasons at least, but I thought he was sharper in the playoffs, and I thought Cleveland's defense as a team was a lot better as a result of that, because
they were playing bad teams.
Well, I think part of it was they shortened their rotation, and their communication was better, and they followed their game plan, and it's the playoffs. Like, they were just more locked in, but you have to be at a whole different level against Golden State, and I think part of the problem against Golden State yesterday was there were points in the game where, like, for the first time in a long time, certainly the first time in the playoffs, I thought LeBron looked tired. And that was because they were running with the Warriors, which you shouldn't do. And instead of playing that free safety, he was guarding Durant.
Well,
and he was trying to do everything that he was doing on offense, and a lot of it wasn't working because the Warriors were anticipating what they were doing, and he was turning the ball over. So I just think even though his numbers were good aside from the turnovers, he was kind of all over the place. Like, he was trying to do so much, and I think he was more tired than normal, and I think it was just kind of a rough night for the whole team. But I do think they have to fix this as a team. Like, he can't do everything on defense for them in this matchup. That's impossible because his primary responsibility, at least when the starting five is out there, is going to be guarding Durant. And that's just a tough matchup. And I don't even think, like, if you go back and look at when, what was it, 2012, when the Thunder were in the finals, like, Durant killed LeBron in a lot of those games too. That's just how good Durant is. That's not a reflection of how good LeBron is as a defender. That's just, like, Durant is impossible.
True, but I think then he was hitting his contested stuff. I think then he was hitting shots that you're like, you got to live with that because he's Kevin Durant. They hit a bunch of stuff last night, but you can't live with that because you can't live with that from anybody. And the Warriors force you into that, which is a credit to them and everything that they've created and done, but it's still a huge problem. I think you said that you can't run with the Warriors. This is an interesting question because last year, both the Thunder and the Cavaliers, they did. They had a lot of success running on Golden State. It's if you attack them and put them on the back of their heels and you create those easy looks in transition, then that forces them to bring the ball up, and that means that they're not pushing the ball back at you, and that makes it a lot better. This team may mm-hmm. realistically be better and different in that regard to the point where that may not be the same. Like, that may not be the same deal because – and, like, Tyronn Lue, I think, came in with a bad approach defensively, and he talked about this last night about, like, they were so worried about three-point shooters that they let Kevin Durant just get to the rim every time. Yeah. And that's a huge problem. I'm not sure that the Cavaliers – this is shocking, but I'm not sure the Cavaliers have really kind of realized how different this Golden State team is. I do think, though, it's interesting because I think there's a level to which – so both teams missed a lot of layups in transition, but from a Cavaliers perspective – if some of the times LeBron got to the rim, if he'd made those layups in transition, if Kyrie had made those layups in transition, the Warriors have fewer of those fast break chaotic opportunities, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
So
I should clarify what I meant. Like, you can't run with the Warriors and get into frenetic game. You have to run opportunistically, and that's what the Thunder did last year. That's what the Cavs did last year. Like, if you're going to run, you have to be sure that you're going to score.
Yes.
You can't get into, like, a crazy up and down run and gun game.
Yeah,
and that's the difference.
Yeah, and that's exactly like, this is it sounds really reductive, but this is really how it is you have to run at them and not let them run back at you. It has to be a one-sided affair, which is really
but that's what the Cavs did last year.
Yeah.
The Cavs generally played, like, slow down isolation ball, hunting matchups, running pick and rolls at specific people, using a lot of the shot clock. Not to the extreme that they did the year before, but a lot of it was kind of throwback basketball, unless they had an easy opportunity off of a turnover or off of a miss, in which case you have LeBron, you have Kyrie, you have great finishers, and you have Kevin Love, well, they had him first part of the series, throwing outlet passes. And if you have the advantage, you can't waste it because it's so hard to score against the Warriors set defense. You have to be so deliberate. So, like, there's a balance there to be found, and they absolutely found it last year for three games when they did the comeback, and they just did not have it in game one. And I thought it was interesting that it was like they'd all agreed to come out and say this, and they talked about it after the game or something, because Tyronn Lue, LeBron James, and Kyrie Irving all went out and said, you can't simulate the Warriors' speed and style in practice. You have to see it. And it seemed like they were just, like, overwhelmed kind of with what the Warriors were doing to them. And by the time – I thought in the third quarter there was, like, a few minutes there where the Cavs – kind of figured out at least what they were supposed to do, but they were so far behind that it didn't make a difference.
Hey guys, I want to tell you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, but there is a better, simpler way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to live events. With SeatGeek's seamless mobile experience, you can buy or sell tickets in just two taps. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for great value. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. I've used it a bunch of times. I've told you about it before. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just used SeatGeek to buy tickets to this concert that I'm going to in August. I'm really excited about it. I'm actually going to get a babysitter and be free of the children for a couple of hours, and it's just sad how excited I am about that prospect. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. It's like power rankings for tickets. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code IEYE today. That's promo code I for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Okay, hot take number two. Kevin Durant, right now, not any other moment, but right now, at this moment in time, today, right now, is the best player in the NBA.
I don't know how to even, what are the parameters? I don't know how to deal with that. I'll give that like a three, because I think at any moment, if you're saying LeBron or KD or Steph or Kawhi, maybe throw Harden Westbrook, if you just said, I think that's the best player, and you had an awesome argument for it, I'd be like, all right. Like, I don't think you're saying something crazy. You're not taking – it's not like you're saying, oh, like Draymond had a great game. He is the best player in the NBA. Like, no, that's nuts. KD, sure. I mean, I think most people would still say LeBron based on how these playoffs have gone in general. But, I mean, surely, like, KD at the top of his powers is as good as anybody, and he was the best player on the floor last night in a game that featured Steph and LeBron.
So I don't like non-competitiveness, which is why the Warriors are a drag for me. I live for competition, and I live for imperfect teams. I like teams that are flawed, that you have to be like – there's this constant tension between the two. And that's always been my struggle with Golden State, is like they just reduce everything to we're going to hit everything and we're going to be better at everything and there's no point in anything. However, it's really remarkable watching KD and Steph, because they worked all year. I noted this throughout the year, and I tried to – and I probably should have written more columns on it than I meant to. I was really impressed by the fact that they got better every single game. They got better every game, every week, every month. Bit by bit, they got better, and they fixed their problems. They didn't stagnate. Like, they kept working and getting better and improving. And last night, you saw what they are really capable of. And, like, they didn't play perfect, but the model that they brought to the table was almost perfect, in that Steph is able to get open opportunities because they're so freaked out by Durant, and Durant's able to get open opportunities because of how freaked out they are by Curry, and the whole team empowers both of them to do so. And that's really impressive. Klay Thompson shot terribly from the field. Terribly. And at the same time, I noted that Klay made this incredible cross-court pass in transition to find KD, who pump-faked and got to the rim again. It was just really great. He did it again later, and KD got a three out of it. Like, they play so well together, and this team has maximized everybody's ability. We get frustrated with teams, as much as I love that Thunder team, and I did, because, again, they were imperfect, and I love that about them. But all of the frustrations that people had about the Thunder and how they did not maximize what they had in Westbrook and Durant, you do not have that here. You do not have that. You're watching a team that has made the most of their talent. And if that is something that really drives you, then I understand loving this part of the Warriors, because they do make the most out of every single guy. It's not the Wizards from, you know, however many years. I think they were better this year, but it's not the Wizards from the Randy Whitman era, where it was like they have all this talent and they just don't use it right. It's not, you know, the Clippers, where they have all this talent but they just do not play with any joy. Everything that the Warriors do is right, and it's extremely impressive, and it is undeniably great, and it's going to win so many titles. And we're going to remember them. And yes, Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City and tacked on to a bandwagon, super, super duper mega team. He did that. We can be real about what he did and still be like, look, if you don't consider this a moralistic decision, which you shouldn't, it is undeniable that he is better now. He is greater now. He makes this team better, and this team makes him better, and the basketball itself is incredible, and that is the reality of the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, I'm with you. Can I fire a hot take at you?
Fire.
All right. Of course Cleveland let Golden State win that first game. Its best strategy last year was letting the huge favorite get comfortable. Then, when everyone said it was over, bam, historic comeback. The Cavs have the Warriors right where they want them at.
Four. Only a four. Because the absurdity of it, I can't give you a five. In order for it to five, I have to believe that somebody screaming it on the morning television would actually say it. So LeBron is now 1-7 in game ones. It is notable that in game twos in the finals, LeBron is 4-3. There's two ways of looking at that. One is, he has won more game twos than he has lost, sir, and he is way better than he is in game one. The other way of looking at it is, he's still only one game over 500 in game twos. And if he loses on Sunday, guess what? He's 500 in those games.
Well, last year they lost game two by what, like 34? 33 something?
I have forgotten. I thought they won game two, and then the Warriors took 3 and 4 in Cleveland, but they won game three last year. That's right?
Yeah, they got slaughtered in game two.
Yeah.
And we all thought it was over.
Yeah. And then the Cavs won, and we were like, oh, maybe the Cavs are going to... Nope, they're done. Let's start pre-writing everything. Well, okay, they won game five, but game six is definitely over. I was joking with people last night. I was joking with Andy Liu from Warriors World. And Eric Malinowski from Bleacher Report. I was talking with them and was like, yeah, I have like six banked columns from when the Warriors were going to win that we had ready to go after game five and game six and game seven, and they just never ran. I'm going to track them down in our system, because they were like, are you just going to use this? I was like, oh yeah, I'm not rewriting the Steph Curry legacy column. No. We are going to take that baby and update it. I'm not doing more work. That's not happening.
My stuff is gone. I don't remember what I wrote. I had to update one of them after they...
After they lost,
I still wrote about how, like, you can't... Like 73 should still stand on its own as, like, meaning something. Because everybody's angle was, like, it's totally worthless. And I was like, I don't think it's worthless. But there was some other stuff I wrote that will just never see the light of day.
I just imagine you. I know you're like, you're not a Warriors fan. You just have a high appreciation of Steph and the way this team plays. But I just have this image of you, like... outside in your backyard in Toronto, like with a big pyre, throwing like floppy disks that contain your columns on it as a single tear rolls down your sheet.
Floppy disk?
Yes.
Yeah.
There are so many kids listening to this. They're like, "What's a floppy disk?" All right.
They use in Canada still.
Hot take: this run with Steph Curry and the Warriors will wind up with him being 10 to 15 spots higher on the all-time list than he would have otherwise without Kevin Durant going to Golden State.
I think that's like a four. I think Steph has already changed the game. I don't know that he needed Durant to come here and kind of help him cement that. Like, they should. We don't know what will happen. We don't know what the team will look like in a few years, but like, they should win more championships this way. But I don't know. I think it's tough to quantify that this early in his career, but I would caution against thinking that Durant is a key variable here.
I think because they're so dominant, he's going to get remembered more favorably. I think it's actually going to cover up a lot of his weaknesses. I think it's going to cover up a lot of his limitations, because like, you're already seeing it where... like, Curry doesn't have to ever force it. He's never put in a bad situation now. Like, Curry's never put in a bad situation. The Cavaliers, it took them a while, but they figured out, and the Thunder last year as well, they figured out how to put Curry in bad situations. And I'm not denying the injury was part of it. And I'm not denying that Curry was great anyway, because he can be great anyway, because he's a great player. But we're talking about degrees. We're talking about degrees of greatness. And I think that what Durant does is he takes a lot of the pressure off of Steph, which I think is a good thing for him. I think he's better when he's able to just go out there and just kind of play. Like, he's not a give me the moment, I'm going to seize this, I'm going to go one-on-one, I'm going to like make a huge play individually. He's more of, I'm going to pick my spots and just kind of play my game, and I'm going to throw behind-the-back passes no matter what quarter it is, and that's what I'm going to do. And I think having KD is going to lift him up to where, you know, look, if they rattle off, and I do not care, we'll get to this in a second, I got another hot take, but I do not care if this is, you know, I do not care about this being one game, whatever. Let's say the Cavaliers come back and pull off some sort of miracle upset. You know who I'm picking to win the title next year? The Golden State Warriors, because they have Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green.
Right.
That's who I'm picking. I don't care who wins this series. By the way, it's going to be the Warriors. but, like,
it's one game.
We're going to get there. We're going to get there. I wrote a whole column. It's one game.
I know. It's one game.
But I think that if, as he racks up 3-4 titles, he's going to end up in the top. It's crazy. He's going to end up as like a top 10 player based on
that. But I don't
think
that's crazy anyway. Like, if you told that to me last year, I would not say that was crazy.
I think that last year's finals kind of showed a little bit of his. I'll say this. To me, you look at a lot of the all-time great players, and they're guys that were dominant on both ends of the floor. They were dominant in multiple areas. Like, they were great in all of these different areas. And Steph really, truly is really great in one area. And everywhere else, he is not bad.
I think that's selling him a little short.
I know you do, but he is not bad in any one area. But he's not a great passer. He is not a great defender. He is not great at anything except shooting, but he is so good at that he is way better than anyone else that's ever done it. And, like, that alone makes him an all-time great player. Like, there's no denying that, like, he was going to go down in history anyways, the best shooter ever. I've never seen anyone shoot like this. But the fact that those other areas are never going to get exposed as non-strengths is going to help, I think, his historical case.
Well, I'd also say, like, some of the stuff that, like, people said was exposed last year was probably a lot to do with injuries. I mean, you saw yesterday when he had big men on him, like, what it looks like when he's healthy and he has a big man on him. He did the same thing he did all of last year's regular season when they won 73 games, and that didn't seem like that was a weakness. Like, I think clearly he was limited.
I'll even give you. I'll even give you. It's not just shooting. He's a great scorer. He worked his ass off to become insane at finishing. I will definitely give you that. He is an incredible scorer. He is not just a shooter. He is an incredible scorer. Much of his ability to get there, I think, is because of the threat of that three-pointer, but that's the way it is with anybody. Like, a guy that's able to do go into the triple threat move out of the post-up, face-up, like, part of the reason that he's able to get to the rim a lot of the time is because guys are worried about his mid-range jumper. And it's just like with Steph. You're so worried about that three-pointer that he's going to get past you. Versus if he was just an average three-pointer or just a good three-pointer, guys might play a step off of him and be able to contain him because he's not extremely explosive. He's not Russell Westbrook. He's not LeBron James. He's not Kevin Durant. He doesn't have that level of explosiveness.
Yeah, but he's a better ball handler than all those guys.
He is.
And that's the thing. Like, he is as skilled as anyone that we've ever seen in the NBA. And that is why I think just limiting it to, like, yeah, he's the best shooter we've ever seen. Yeah, he is. But also, he's one of the best ball handlers. Also, he is, I think, like, I know you're not super fond of his passing because he's had some, like, bad turnovers, and you think that's just part of him. But, like, I think he is a really good passer, and I think he's a really good teammate, and I think he sets screens better than most guards. I think he understands the game way better than people give him credit for in terms of being a floor general, and that's been part of his evolution as a player. That's been a question that he had since he was in college. And I think he's a better defender than people give him credit for, too. Like, yeah, there are certain areas. Like, he will never just be, like, he's not going to be, like, an Avery Bradley, like, shutdown defender. But he has awesome hands. I think he has really good anticipation. He can jump into passing lanes. And he is generally a smart team defender, too, who doesn't get exploited all that often. He did get exploited in last year's playoffs, but I think the Warriors are also smarter about dealing with that now, as we saw last night.
I agree.
So I don't think he has a ton of big flaws. I think he's the best shooter ever, and he's really good at a lot of other things, too.
This team has an immaculate ability to be able to hide any sort of weakness that he might have. But this makes it seem like it's just a Steph thing. They can do the same thing with KD or Draymond or Klay. Like, if you were trying to build around Draymond Green, right? If you were trying to build a team with Draymond Green as the best player, how often are you just like, we're just not going to let him shoot all the time? But you can't do that with the Warriors because they're just going to have other guys shoot. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. Is like, their combination of talent allows for all of their weaknesses to be accommodated by everybody. And, to your point, none of their weaknesses are what I would call weaknesses. They're average to good. That's as bad as you're going to get with most of Golden State. Like,
and this is a discussion that we had when Durant went there.
Yep.
Because there have been super teams that have failed because the pieces don't fit. There have been chemistry issues. Sometimes it's just taken, like, an entire year to figure things out. And I think we were both For the most part, I mean, I know I definitely was, and I think you're pretty much with me, that, like, this won't be like that, because the pieces fit together. The Warriors have always been more than the sum of their parts, and the sum of their parts is awesome anyway. And to add Durant to that, but to slide him into a role where there's actually an opening for him, and when you have Draymond, like, so naturally able to take, like, okay, I'll take fewer shots, and I'll just focus more on defense and focus more on passing. That makes sense. For Steph to just be like, all right, well, I'll still, like, play free and take off the dribble threes, but I just won't ever need to force it anymore at the end of the shot clock because we have KD. Like, that makes sense. Like, it just they did not alter their style of play hardly at all, aside from taking advantage of matchups a little more now that KD is there, and we've seen that in the playoffs, specifically under Mike Brown, which was always kind of his thing. But they've stayed core to they've stayed true to the core of who they are, and that the system makes everybody better in a way that, like, the failed super teams that wasn't the case for.
Yep. And this is actually something one of the few things that's actually interesting about any of this is, like, maybe we're too hard on these other teams. Like, maybe we are. Like, because nobody else has this kind of collection of talent to be able to accommodate for everybody else. Like, these weaknesses that we've pointed out with all these other players, maybe the bigger problem is not that they have these weaknesses. Maybe we have unrealistic standards, and the standards just have to be, you have to find people that can cover for those weaknesses, not who complement each other, but who are able to cover for each other's weaknesses. And that's what I think makes it difficult, because it's perfect with the Warriors. It's as close to perfection as you're going to get. Like, this is going to be something I'm going to be writing about in this series, is the idea of basketball perfection. I asked the Warriors earlier this season if you could play a perfect basketball game, and I got some interesting answers that I'm going to revisit. I ducked all that stuff for later. I'm very excited that I kept it all under wraps and was like, I'm going to bank this for later on. And I'm excited to write about that, because about the idea of perfection, but it's the synergy that they're able to create between their strengths and weaknesses is really fascinating. I got another hot take.
Give it to me.
Do not blame Kevin Love for last night. He is absolutely no responsibility for the Cavaliers' failures last night.
I give that a 3.5.
I think
you can't blame him entirely, but I think to say he has no responsibility at all would be to ignore the fact that he just doesn't fit well in this series.
Do you want to know
and that every time he got matched up with Kevin Durant, Durant looked like he was like it was like a Christmas morning or whatever.
That didn't happen like very often. That didn't happen much. I went back and watched.
Happen a ton, but it happened.
Well, I'll say this. That one for me was a 1. I really believe that. Look, he shot 4 of 13 from the field, which that's, you know, if he had shot 5 of 13, you kind of live with that. He had 15 points. He had 21 rebounds. I thought his defense, and he was 3 of 6 from 3, by the way. I thought his defense was actually excellent. Curry got him on a layup. Curry dribbled just like he did last year, had the same situation, didn't hesitate, didn't overthink it, just drove to the rim and scored. But Love stayed with him the entire time. He played good defense on him. Steph just made a good play. Like, Love wasn't blowing rotations. Love wasn't losing guys in transition. Love wasn't doing the things that Kyrie Irving did. Kyrie Irving was a disaster. Kyrie Irving was an all-out, complete disaster defensively. Kevin Love, I thought, was fine. I think Kevin Love has played well. I think Kevin Love played well last night. I don't think last night comes down to Kevin Love. I think Kevin Love did his part. Several of his shots at the rim that he missed were offensive putbacks that didn't go in, but he was still battling. And part of it, he did everything he could to score at the rim, and Draymond Green is the best perimeter or best defender in the NBA, and he just made it too hard on him. Like, he got the shot up, he did everything he could, and he couldn't get the ball to go in, and that's what you have to kind of struggle to do. And so he was taking contested shots, which is what you're going to have to do. Draymond won that, but I like the way that Kevin Love played in Game 1.
Yeah, I didn't think he was bad. I just still think he's not a great fit against this team.
I don't know.
And that's not Kevin Love's fault.
I just don't see that. I think that he did enough good things. I thought he was really aggressive in rebounding. I thought he was aggressive with the ball. Like, I don't think that there are situations where you can really point to this and say, like, oh, he's just completely overwhelmed and outmatched. Like, a lot of the Warriors' offense didn't really involve attacking him. And the parts that did, there's stuff that you're just like, you're going to live with that. You're not just like, oh, man, you can't have Kevin Love on him. I think that was the case last year. I thought in Game 1 he was fine. I really thought he was okay. You got another one for me?
Yeah. I do.
You're funny because it's like all of the Warriors stuff is like, and like all, your thing is like basically all of the Warriors are good and all of the Cavaliers are bad.
No, not at all. I think Kevin Love's a great player.
Who did you think?
And I think, like, a huge part of, like, the Cavs' strategy this series has to be, like, making him a viable option. And I think part of the reason he was so good in the offensive glass was the Warriors were so freaked out by Tristan Thompson, they had, like, three guys trying to box him out. Yeah. And Love would just grab the rebound.
And they did the work on him, and it worked.
Yeah, but, I mean, you have to account for Love, too. But I sort of see, like, my problem with Kevin Love is not anything that he did. Like, it's not his fault. So, the thing to me is that I thought they were at a defensive disadvantage every time he was on the court. I just think that more than anything, the Cavs need to dictate the terms of engagement in this series, and they need to be as versatile as possible on defense. They need to switch as much as they can. They need to get the Warriors out of their flow. They need to be physical with guys when they're cutting. All this stuff that, like, didn't happen as much as they needed to. And that's not to say that's the biggest issue. I think the biggest issue was Cleveland's offense. And that they shot poorly and that they turned the ball over like crazy. That was why it was lopsided. But, I mean, the defense, it just needs to be better. And, this challenge is really tough. And I think it's not as simple. I wrote this last night because I wrote about the adjustments that the Cavs have to make or at least consider. And it's not as simple as just like, oh, don't play Love, because like, no, like then you're killing your offense, which also was an issue. You need the offense to be better. And you want him on the court because one of the theoretical advantages that they should have that they didn't really have is rebounding. So they need him. It's just a matter of like, you can't have his minutes be a minus. And I thought they were. Anyway, another hot take from me. Everybody, myself included, who used the term three-match or rematch going into this series should apologize for it. That is crazy. This is not a rematch. This is not a three-match. This is a completely different series. Kevin Durant is there now. This is just not the same Warriors team, and we can't keep referring to last year and the year before. It's fundamentally changed now.
0.375 is what you get for that take.
That's it.
You get for that take. I've been saying this all week. I said that in a lot of my preview materials, was that these are not the same teams. I've been saying that on radio, trying to say, like, these are not the same teams. We talked about it earlier with Ty Lue. Apparently Ty Lue thought they were the same team. They're not. This is not the same squad. They attack the rim way more. They are way better defensively. The gap between the two, this is what was fascinating, is it's not that I should have known, right? Because I don't blame myself for not realizing a 73-win team would blow a 3-1 lead in the finals. But last year, I kept looking at the Warriors as they racked up win after win after win, and I kept being like, the defense isn't as good. Like, it's not. It's not as good as it was in 2015. Like, their defense was way better then. Their numbers were fine. They were, like, a top 10, top 5 defense. But for much of the season, they were, like, I think between 12 and 7 is where they were for most of the season, and they turned it on late. I kept thinking, like, this team is not as good defensively. But then the other part of me was like, but it doesn't matter. Because look at what Curry's doing offensively. Look at these threes he's hitting. What are you going to do against that? Look at what Klay can do. It's not going to matter. I really, truly believe, and Kerr talked about this a little bit after the finals. He mentioned things like, we got away from our identity. I really think after the finals, whenever they got together, I think that there was a moment where Draymond was like, we have to get back to being great defensively. I think Draymond got caught up in it too. I think Draymond, like, loved them hitting threes and running people out and all the success. I think he loved it too. But, like, I've really, being around this team for about 14, and everyone that covers the team regularly will say this to you immediately, but it takes about 14 seconds of being around the Warriors to realize that Draymond Green is the leader of the Golden State Warriors. Like, he is the undeniable leader of that team. I think that he came into the offseason and was like, we are going to get back to being focused on defense, and we're going to be defense first. And they did that. And this team is better defensively, and it's adding Durant made them better in huge ways, but it's both. It's they added Durant, and they're refocused on defense. And when you do both, great things are going to happen for you. And they always knew that the offense was going to figure itself out because they have too much talent, and they did.
And part of it is also, like, respect to Harrison Barnes. He did an awesome job defending guys who were bigger and stronger than him. Like, I'll never forget, like, him battling with Zach Randolph and all that. But in terms of just, like, defensive IQ and length and versatility, I mean, Durant is a rim protector. Mm-hmm. Durant will break up cross-court passes just based on the fact that he's so freaking long and can get his hands on them. Like, Barnes wasn't doing all that. He was good. But Durant, like, could have been on the all-defensive team this year if he had been more healthy. Yeah. Like, that's how good he was on that end.
Yeah.
So that, like, beyond the team refocusing, like, they got an upgrade there. They obviously, everybody talked about the upgrade that they had on offense, but I think even when he signed, like, both of us wrote about how Durant is also a better defender than Barnes, and that has definitely turned out to be the case.
And it's not just Durant, though. Like, the team is better in a lot of areas. This team right now, not throughout the regular season, there were moments, this is the best Steph Curry I think we've ever seen.
I think it's the best Curry and the best Durant.
And so, like, Curry, and people are going to think that's crazy because of what Curry did last year. But again, like, I would tell you, okay, compared last year, think of last year as, like, if 2006 Kobe were actually efficient. It's volume, right? It's, like, sheer volume. But 2009 Kobe, that to me is his best season. That was the best season I've ever seen from Kobe Bryant, was 2009. He played within the offense. He made good passes. His defense was great. He had a complete package to the game. And to me, that's where Steph Curry's at right now. So they've got a better Curry. They've got Durant. They have the same Draymond, essentially. They have, like, the same Draymond. They have a little worse Klay Thompson. But a little worse Klay Thompson means he isn't hitting shots that he can hit while he's still playing great defense and throwing great passes. Iguodala,
I mean, Klay Thompson is doing everything well except for the shots going in.
Yeah.
Like, that's... Iguodala's reality.
Iguodala's not as good as last year, but he's still good enough. JaVale is a massive upgrade for them. I don't have any sort of, like, there's this that part of you that wants to resist it, because, like, when you see a guy be as bad on the court and in the locker room as JaVale McGee was in Denver, and in the locker room is a complicated element, okay? There were guys in Denver that loved JaVale. Like, loved him. Like, there were guys that really, they truly, genuinely loved JaVale. But there was a lot of eye-rolling at JaVale in that locker room, too. It's never one thing. It's not just one thing. It's complicated. Same thing with Draymond, right? Like the Warriors roll their eyes at Draymond. He gets going too far sometimes. But they've learned to be like, he's too valuable. But this JaVale is why Masai Ujiri gave him the max extension in Denver. Because JaVale, he realized that when JaVale was going to be this age, this is what he could be. And JaVale simply did not commit himself in Denver or in the other places that he stopped that way. And so he wound up out of the league, and now he's back.
And then he had a bunch of injuries, too. Like, it was complicated.
And now he's dumb. And realistically, he's like, people talk about this, like, he's got an asthma thing. He gets winded. We're gonna try and ask tomorrow at availability, but I'm gonna bet that's why he McAdoo got the minutes in the second half. Is JaVale gets winded. He gets really tired. And when he gets tired, he makes more mistakes. But look, he absolutely kicked the Cavaliers' ass for however many minutes he played in that first half. He just was great. And that's better than what Bogut did. Bogut had stone hands. Zaza Pachulia does not have stone hands. He made a lot of bad shots early. He passed up on good shots and missed good looks he needed to make. But in the second half, he settled down, and he was still good. And he made plays, and the Warriors fans went crazy for him again.
You could tell that after the first few minutes, somebody told him, like, you have to shoot the ball. If you have an open lane, if you are right at the basket, do not pass it up. And then he had the confidence to, like, flip in, like, reverse layup after that. It was like, what changed here?
And by the way, hot take, like, how dare the Warriors fans turn that quickly on the guy that won them the Western Conference Finals? How dare they? How dare they? So, you know, I think this team undeniably is better. They are, and it's weird, they didn't win as many games. But that to me is kind of interesting too, is how is it that they're a better team if they didn't win as many games? And it comes down to, I think part of it is the fickle nature of actual regular season wins, about how many can go sideways or just tilt one way because of a lot of crazy factors. Another is that kind of volatility as a product of the shooting, where teams just couldn't keep up in the regular season. But I think undeniably, you look at this and you're just like, it sounds crazy because they won 73 last year, but this team's better. It's not just because of Kevin Durant. The team is better. The team as a whole is better. Their talent is better and the team is better. Okay, hot take. It's over. Not just this series, but though this series is over, the next four series are done. The next 5 years, we know what's going to happen. It's going to be the Golden State Warriors, and they're probably going to lose a handful of games in that time. They will lose less than 10 games over the next 5 years, counting this year.
You mean in the playoffs?
In the playoffs.
Or in the okay. That's a 4.5, because I know what you're – like, I can't quite give you the 5, because I think, like, you're almost trying too hard to get the five.
I'm not.
Like, you're trying to construct a scenario. No, like, I get it. You're saying this is automatically a dynasty, and it's not going to get harder for them. It is going to be pretty much like this for the next few years, even though this particular series isn't even over. Which, automatically, once you start talking about that, that puts you in at least a four. But, I don't know. 4.5 feels right to me.
I was talking about this on...
There are a lot of variables. There are variables this summer with this team, with Livingston and Iguodala. Then there are variables the next summer and the summer after that.
But we know. Here's what's going to happen, okay? Livingston's probably gone because they've been raising Ian Clark for this moment, right? Ian Clark is like... They've raised him to this point to get him here, okay? So Livingston's probably gone. I think Iguodala is smart enough to know. I just do. He's such a smart dude. He's a genuinely just... And I don't mean that like Andre Iguodala is smart, you know, compared to other NBA players. Like Andre Iguodala is a really brilliant human being. He's a genuinely smart guy.
Durant's already sending out signals he's going to take less money they can keep one or both of those guys.
So like he's smart. Like I think Andre Iguodala is like smarter than I am, and I'm a genius. So like, so he's coming back. So Iguodala's coming back. If they lose Livingston, it's okay because Livingston's getting up there and they can afford. And they've got Clark, who's really good.
And they got McCaw.
And then from there, they're always gonna there's gonna be guys like Zaza. There's gonna be guys like David West. There's always gonna be guys who are gonna be willing to be like, yes, I will absolutely take the minimum. Yes, I will absolutely take whatever exception fits in. Yes, I will absolutely take whatever money you have left. Yes, I will absolutely take whatever I need to be a part of this because I want that ring. Because when I win that, you can't take that away from me. It doesn't matter how I got it. All that matters is I'm able to say I played 13 years in the NBA and I won a title. And that validates them in a very, very big way. And they will always be able to get those guys. They are going to continue to get players like that. And the core is not going to go anywhere. The only two hopes are that either Clay gets to a point where he's like, look, I love winning titles, but I do want to kind of see what I can do on my own. And it doesn't seem likely with his personality. He's a laid-back dude who is more likely to be like, why would I break this up? This is a good thing. Who cares? And Draymond, and the other thing is that Draymond becomes so abrasive that he rubs on everybody, and eventually there's conflict and he leaves. But Draymond always...
Well, he and Draymond and Clay become free agents the same year, right?
I think so, yeah. But, like, that's way down the line. And so, they will lose some games, and there's injuries that can also screw with it, too. Maybe there'll be a year where just everybody gets hurt. But I was thinking about this, too. It's funny. So in the CBA, they made it really hard.
Sure, Clay becomes a free agent 2019. And then he'll be eligible for the Supermax thing. Mm-hmm. And then Draymond is a year later.
But they are going to be in the Bay, and they're going to have enough money to just like, why, if you're Lakers, why not be like, yes, I will pay $300 million in tax because I'm making $3 billion with this team. Like, why would?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they should do. That's what they owe this core, I think. they should just give them everything.
And that's what they'll do. Like, here's the thing is Lakeb's pomposity is obnoxious, but the dude's approach to running a team has been sound. He has been light years ahead. Like, I don't think he should have said that because I think that's obnoxious to say. I think there's a way you should carry yourself. But look, they have invested a lot in things like player health technology, in analytics, in front office structure. They pay to have Jerry West as a consultant, for God's sakes. Like, mm-hmm. they have done everything right with this team. Lakeb wasn't wrong that the team is more than just the talent. It's just that you have to say it's the talent. That's how this works. There are just things you have to do. And so all these things are they've built a sustainable, repeatable structure. And yeah, Kevin Durant will probably take less. He doesn't need it. He's got the Nike money. Like, Kevin Durant has a billion ways of making money. He is part of a mm-hmm. generation of players that learned from the mistakes of previous ones who wound up bankrupt. And they have diversified their portfolios, and they have invested themselves, and they have made themselves into way more than just basketball players from a business perspective. They have multiple sources of income that you and I are never even going to be able to imagine. So, like, Like, he doesn't need that money, and he'll take that because he wants to be a part. Like, for them, this is awesome. Any sort of dominance on the Warriors' part is not anything that they should be held accountable for. That's what they're supposed to do. You're supposed to do what the Warriors did. You are supposed to do what the Warriors did. They deserve no blame. They deserve no hatred. They deserve no... Like, resentment is an emotional feeling, and that's hard to, like, justify whether or not they should or should not get. But there's no way you can justify anything except appreciation for what they've done, because they have done everything that they've played within the... Outside of tampering with Durant, they've played within the rules on everything that they've done. They have done everything.
Everybody tampers with free agents.
I don't care. That bothers me. Like,
the front office didn't tamper. The players did.
But that still bothers
me. And that's just basically allowed.
It just bothers. You're right. It's allowed. Yeah. But it bothers me. Like, is that okay that it bothers me?
I can't control what bothers you and doesn't. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to be upset about Durant's free agency, like, any free agent. J.J. Redick has been tampered with. Like, absolutely. George Hill has been tampered with. Kyle Lowry has been tampered with. There was a clip going around on Reddit from All-Star Weekend when Joel Embiid shakes Kyle Lowry's hand and somebody's like, that's your future point guard. Like, the culture of the NBA, like, guys will say to each other at the free throw line, like, come play with us next year. Like, that's part of it.
So we're far away from where we were at. But anyway, they don't deserve any sort of blame or backlash for that. They've done everything right. I do think that they're going... I think we're looking at an unprecedented era of dominance. And I think the way... I've been thinking a lot about it. There's this part in Klosterman's book, What If We're Wrong? And he's talking about the NFL. And he's talking about how there's two sides of the camp. And in Gladwell's camp, there's the idea of that the NFL is going to die out because everyone's realizing that the game is... okay, hang on. CBS is official NFL partner. Hang on. All of the various criticisms of the NFL are going to eventually catch up with them, and people are going to stop watching. And Klosterman argues that's flawed because you're assuming that everyone is smart and informed and cares about those issues, and most people don't. And what he's talking about are casual fans. And so I've been wrestling with, if the playoffs are this terrible, and everyone watching has been like, this sucks, like... Even if you like dominance, you're still like, this is not very fun to watch. Like, you can be like, oh, it's so beautiful, it's awesome, but you're still, you're not going to stay in front of your couch. Okay, let me put it this way. If you're on your couch and the score is that one team leads by 35 points, you're going to look on your phone or your computer, or you're going to go to get a snack, or you're going to talk to people or whatever. You're not going to be locked into the game, right?
Right.
But you're still watching. And casual fans are still going to watch, and that's why we see the ratings. ESPN today released its ratings report, and the NBA, in coordination with the NBA, this is the third highest game won in ABC history, behind the previous two finals. It says something that it's down this year from the previous two, but the ratings are still sky high. People are still watching because casual fans are still going to care.
It went up against the spelling bee. People still watched.
It took me until last night to realize where the effect is going to be. Because I was like, well, this has to hurt somewhere. I realized where it's actually going to hurt. It's going to hurt us. That's where it's going to hurt. It's the NBA, for the longest time, has been the most fun sport to talk about online. It's got the best blog culture. It's got the best Twitter culture. As problematic as the Twitter culture can be. It's got the best Reddit culture. It's got the best... there's a trade machine where literally people make up trades and say, like, what about this deal? And all of those things, and player movement, you think, like, one big move could do this. Like, oh, man, what if this guy goes here? That could change everything. All of that is going to go away. It's not going to be...
You really think so?
It's not going to be completely gone, but it's going to be severely dampened because it's going to be... Because think of it this way. Gordon Hayward can join the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, and you would in no way pick the Boston Celtics to win the NBA title or to take two games off the Warriors next year. You wouldn't do it.
No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't.
I don't Gordon think that Hayward means people is, are going to stop talking about Gordon Hayward's free agency and like, no, what that would mean for the like. I don't.
We're still going to talk about it. It's about degrees, right? Like the diehard fans are always going to be here and always going to be interested because they love basketball and they grew up with the NBA and they remember like the good times, whether that was the Jordan era or whether that was the Shaq Kobe Lakers when the league was garbage or whether that was the 2005 era where you had you know a terrible finals but you had the kind of the rise of the Mavericks Spurs Suns trifecta. Where that was really Mavericks Spurs Suns that was really compelling for a couple of years, or the early 2000s with the Heat, or the however you hold on to those things, and there's still gonna be that audience, but there is gonna be a sense from a lot of people of like, yeah, but what's the point? You know, the Warriors are gonna win. There's gonna be a lot of those fans that are like, they really love basketball, but they're gonna be like, I don't know though, like what does it matter? That's where I think the hit's gonna be. The ratings are gonna be fine. It's gonna be the surrounding culture around it that I think is gonna suffer from the Warriors' dominance, which again is not their responsibility. They did what they're supposed to do, but that's what I see happening. Because, and here's the other thing about all this: people are going to say, like, Matt, come on, you're being ridiculous. Like, nothing lasts forever. Or things always change. Sports is unpredictable. It's one game. The Cavaliers could win the next one. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. The Cavaliers could win the next one. Maybe the Cavaliers win the series. The future is unknowable. Nothing matters, right? But here's the thing: how we experience it matters. This to me is what's interesting, because how we experience the Warriors is that they are going to win everything and there really is no hope. That's how we experience.
But I'm not sure everybody experiences it the way you do. Like last night in
Do you really think in the first quarter, do you really think anybody else is winning the title for the next 5 years?
I have no idea what's going to happen 5 years from now.
If I asked you to predict, what would you say?
Based on what we know now, I would pick the team that has Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, but we have no idea. We didn't see the Warriors coming. Nobody saw this Cavs team coming. Nobody saw that Heat team coming. Like, we don't know how the league will change, how talent will disperse. There could be other super teams that end up forming in reaction to this. We just don't know. But what I was saying is, like, you're talking, like, yesterday did not feel like everybody was bummed out. Like, I remember the first half of the game, everybody was on Twitter was like, oh my God, this is so great. This is living up to the hype. This is what real basketball is like. This is so intense.
And then
the Warriors separated themselves. But when that happened, I didn't see everybody like, oh, this is terrible again. Like that's not the feeling that I had. Like, we'll see. If this is a super one-sided series, then sure. That conversation is going to be all over the place. But the Warriors did not take a 20-point lead by halftime. Like, it went until the third quarter till that happened. And there was some competitive basketball, and I don't think that every game is necessarily going to go that way. Like, you and I agree, the Warriors are the favorites. They should be. They have more talent. They have a great formula. It's going to be really hard for Cleveland to stop. But I also think the Cavs played worse than they could have. I thought they were super sloppy.
Well, let's go there. Let's go there.
There are adjustments they could make.
As opposed to the existential malaise, let's go there. Because you wrote a column on exactly how the Cavaliers can adjust in going forward in this series. I haven't had a chance to read it yet because I've been working and traveling and getting back to the hotel and whatnot. But
how dare you? Make time, Matt.
I will try. Give me some things that we should be looking at in that article for how the Cavaliers can play better.
I mean, there were 3 points, but the main one was, like, turn back the clock. Like, they have to be the team that executes better. They have to be the team that is super deliberate. They have to make it into a possession game, and then they have to win the possession game. The problem is the Warriors are going to be better at that possession game than they were last year because the team has changed. But that's still the only way you can do it. Like, you can run opportunistically. You cannot get into a frenetic, crazy game. You can't let the Warriors dictate the style. Like, LeBron needs to pound the ball. He needs to do all the things that I, like, really don't love teams doing. Like, it kind of hurts me to write this when I'm writing it. But I, like, from watching the last 2 years, as we said, this is not really a rematch. It's different. But I really think the only way this Cavs team can beat this Warriors team is, like, okay, you have the best playmaker in the NBA in LeBron, who's the best matchup hunter in the NBA, can make defenses bend to his will. And then you have the best isolation scorer, perhaps, in the backcourt with Kyrie Irving. So you need to accentuate that. You need to accentuate your rebounding. advantage by making sure the floor is balanced and you can play isolation plays, you can play pick and rolls, you can have post-ups to the point where it's easier to take advantage of that. And then it's easier to get back in transition and stop the Warriors from running. Like, they need to kind of make this boring. They need to make it a slugfest. They need to, like, have long possessions unless it's an easy fast break opportunity, in which case you push. So... Like that is the main thing to me, is to get back to that. To, like, they have to get away from what they did for most of the playoffs. They have to realize this is completely different, and what worked before will not work. That might mean playing, like, LeBron 45 minutes, Kyrie 45 minutes, Tristan 45 minutes, and, like, you have Shump and JR and, like, Richard Jefferson up in the 30s too, and maybe Kevin Love is only yet at 30 minutes instead of more than that. I don't know. But I think the priority needs to be slow, deliberate offense, and then versatile, physical defense on the Warriors, which was their formula last year. This does not guarantee a win, but it gives the Cavs a chance. And I thought it was just alarming how sloppy they looked, and so much of that has to do with the Warriors being amazing defensively. I thought that was an incredible effort by Golden State on defense, forcing turnovers, being really aggressive, and being super smart, as they always are. But if the Warriors are turning the ball over, like, a handful of times, and the Cavs are turning it over 20 times, like, that's, like, they're dead. They're dead before you know anything about the rest of the game.
So the ship even sank.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you could just look at the field goals attempted last night, and you'd already know. Like, that's because of offensive rebounds for the Warriors, and it's because of turnovers from the Cavs. So it's about cleaning things up first and foremost, and then you can get to the rest of it, and then the matchup stuff.
Yeah. I have another hot take.
Give it to me.
LeBron and the Cavaliers know. They know that they are outgunned. They know that they are outmatched. And they know that there's no way to beat a team that they had to do everything perfectly against in a comeback last year after they added Kevin Durant. They know.
I think that's a 4.5 because I don't think LeBron would think that way.
I think he does. Like, I'll tell you this.
I thought that after they were down 3-1.
I get the sense.
I thought that partially after they were down 2-0 last year. I thought that, and it just wasn't the case.
I get that sense. Like, to me, there has been kind of a sense from him of, like, okay, so here's a moment. I wrote about this in my column on LeBron and KD last night. LeBron comes out of the tunnel, okay? He's the first one coming down the tunnel off of game one. And he stops in the tunnel, and he turns around, and he, like, no smiles, no anger either. He's just, like, giving fives and slapping guys on the butt and being like, okay, let's go. All right. Like, trying to be a leader and a presence for his guys. And he does that the whole way through. Everybody. Dante Jones, Kyle Korver, everybody. He does the whole thing. And I thought it was legitimately a nice moment and shows his leadership of, like, first guy off, I'm going to, like, let you guys know I'm here. We're going to do this. We're all together. I thought it was a nice moment. But I also get the feeling that it's like almost like denial. I think that there's a part of him that knows. And, like, Ty Lue was asked an annoying question last night and was just like, they're the best I've ever seen. Like, he didn't want to answer and was like, they're the best I've ever seen. What do you want? And that's the reality is I think that to a degree they know. Like, he's got – it's just crazy because it's like, oh, remember back in 2014 and we were like, holy crap, the Cavaliers are going to have LeBron and Kyrie and Love. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, that is not nearly enough, sir. That is not nearly enough. And so I think to a degree he knows, and I think that he's probably, I think that's got a little bit to do with why he's been like, I'm not in the business of proving people wrong anymore. I think it's why he's shifted a little bit in terms of saying, I don't have to prove anything for my legacy, which I don't think he's wrong about. I think he's right. I think he's absolutely right. I think he's 100% right on both of those things.
But okay, let's define, like, what does it mean by he knows? He knows it's over? Because that's how I took it. If it's he knows the Warriors are, like, almost impossible and they're going to have to play the best they've ever played and get a little lucky, too, to win. Because if it's the latter, then I agree. But if it's he knows this thing is over, then no. I don't think so.
I think he knows that... I just think he knows that they're better. That they're just way better. And that... I don't know if he knows if he can beat this team. Because I think he's too smart to not know. I think he's too smart. I think you can look at any team that he's faced in the past and be like, I can beat this team. 2013 Heat. Or Heat versus the Spurs. I could beat this team. 2014 Heat versus the Spurs, who got waxed. I think he legitimately was like, we can beat them. Like, I think 2015 Cavaliers versus the Warriors, he felt like he could beat them. I think last year he doubted it, and then he found it in I think he found it at some point in that series, after game four. I think that there was a moment, and he just found another level.
I think there's something to that. I think there needs to be a point where the Cavs have enough success against them, like this version of them, to really say, okay, this is the formula. Like, we just pound it, we execute extremely well, and we can do it. But I do think since they executed so poorly, if it was a close game, I'd feel kind of worse for them. Like, since they executed so poorly, since they were so sloppy and they did all the wrong things, they turned the ball over, they were bad in transition defense, they didn't own the glass, they didn't actually, like, take advantage of the advantage that they had, I think they can go into it saying, like, we still haven't, like, we have to play our best. And I think there's still a part of them that believes when we play our best, no one can beat us, even the Warriors. And that might be delusional, but that's the mentality they needed last year. Because I think that was part of it when we've, like, seen the quotes after last year from David Griffin, from LeBron. Like, they just looked at the first few games of the series and they said, well, we didn't play well. So that's fine that the Warriors beat us like that. We just have to actually do what makes us great. And I think they're telling themselves the same thing right now.
Okay, so we'll be back for game two when the Cavs inevitably win, and then all of a sudden everything is completely different. But this wraps up your
this edition. Podcast will be hilarious to listen to if the Cavs even the series out.
Yeah, it will be. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm not. I am open to the possibility. I believe in experiencing and talking about things from the moment and where they're at. And I believe that the assumption that you can kind of project things is... the assumption that you can project things which are unlikely seems flawed to me. Like, you're like, these things could happen. Okay, but what's the biggest probability here? And that's what influences where I...
Well, the biggest probability is that the Warriors will win, and they'll win in, like, five or six games like most of us predicted, right? Like, that's the reality. And that was the reality last year, too.
There's a reason... I started counting. There's a reason that 8 different media members since I've arrived in San Francisco have said to me privately, am I crazy for thinking they could sweep? Like, no one wants to say it. And I'm like,
no one wants to talk about it. Yeah.
And I'm like, of course they could do it. Like, I took Cavs, I took Warriors at 6 because I don't want people thinking I don't respect LeBron. But
yeah, I did the same thing.
But we all know.
And because I genuinely do respect LeBron, and it's not just what people think. Like, I do think it's possible to take 2 games.
Do you?
I think it's possible. Yes.
I find that suspect. I'm not sure you do. I'm kidding. Of course you do.
I think it was on a Zach Lowe, Jeff Van Gundy podcast before the series started. It was on some podcast. I think it was that one. And the question was, would you be more surprised by a Warriors sweep or Cavs winning in 7? And I think the Van Gundy answer, if I'm remembering this right, was he'd be more surprised by Cavs in 7. And me too. Like, if that's the choice, this goes the distance in the Cavs upset, or the Cavs upset in 6 even, versus the Warriors sweeping. Like, I think the Warriors sweeping is more likely. I think there's a significant talent gap. And the Cavs have to kind of muddy things up and play dinosaur basketball in order to make that less relevant. And they didn't do that in game one. I'm not sure that they'll be able to do that at all. And that's why I think the Warriors should be, like, it was correct that they were big favorites, and they should have been big favorites last year. They, like, if you played last year's series 100 times, like, how many times do you realistically think the Cavs upset them? And we had that conversation afterward. That doesn't invalidate it. Like, the Cavs had an incredible comeback. And then the Warriors added Kevin Durant and changed the whole thing completely. So it's going to be that much harder. So, like, that's where this thing stands. Is like you have to start from a point where this could be competitive, but if the Cavs actually pull it off, it would be insane. It would be the best thing LeBron has ever done. And I think we saw why in game one, but that doesn't mean every game is going to be decided by 20 points.
One final note. This is from Tom Haberstroh of ESPN. This was the largest point differential loss for LeBron in a game one finals game.
Yikes.
There you go. All right, that will wrap it up for the CBS Sports Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Moore. You can find me on Twitter at MattMooreCBS or at HP Basketball. You can find James at Outside the NBA. James, thanks for joining me.
Can't believe we didn't talk about Big Baby and Austin Rivers.